take me on for 2 months. And if I do good work, you could pay me after that. We could figure something out. That was my pitch. And a few of them replied. I ended up picking one. And it was actually incredible because, yeah, so free work is not something I always recommend. People get quite mad about this. Like, oh, you're telling people to work for free, which I totally get it. But in my case, I ended up getting so much free mentorship. So when I started that job, there was a developer who'd been working as a developer for 15 years, and he was mentoring me every day and helping me, answering my questions. And so the value I got out of that was so incredible.
Hello, and welcome to Developer's Journey, the podcast bringing you the making of stories of successful software developers to help you on your upcoming journey. I'm your host, Tim Bourguignon. On this episode 181, I receive Madison Canna. Madison is a UI engineer at Showcase IDX. She's the creator of the Code Book Club, a community based on study groups for new and experienced developers. And she's also a fellow podcaster, and she invited me recently on her show to talk about my two favorite topics, mentorship and this very podcast. Madison, welcome to Dev Journey.
Thanks, Tim.
But before we come to your story, I want to thank the terrific listeners who support the show every month. You are keeping the Dev Journey lights up. If you would like to join this fine crew and help me spend more time on finding phenomenal guests than editing audio tracks, please go to our website, devjourney.info, and click on the Support Me on Patreon button. Even the smallest contributions are giant steps toward a sustainable Dev Journey journey. Thank you. And now, back to today's guest. So, Madison, as you know, the show exists to help the listeners understand what your story looked like and imagine how to shape their own future. So, as always, let's go back to the very beginnings. Where would you place the start of your dev journey?
It was right after I dropped out of college. I dropped out of college because I felt like I wasn't learning any real-world skills when I was there, and I really didn't know what to do with my life yet. So as I was trying to figure out what to do with my life after I dropped out, I went to visit my sister in San Francisco, and she had actually attended a coding boot camp. It was one of the first coding boot camps that really came out back in 2012 or something like that. And she had attended a coding boot camp, and she became a developer and moved to San Francisco, started working for a tech company. So I went to visit her and was in the office seeing all the programs. And then I went home after that. I took a free coding course and I loved it. And then I decided to become a developer.
Wow. So how far were your previous studies from coding?
When I was in college, I studied English, but I switched my major around a few times. I wasn't quite sure what to do yet. And I think that's pretty reasonable when you're a 20-year-old kid. You know, we're kind of expected to figure out our life path and exactly what career we want to do when we're 20 years old, which is pretty unrealistic. But that's what I was thinking at the time.
Mm-hmm. Come on, you didn't know it by the age of five or stuff like that. That's what we're supposed to know. I mean, come on. Right. I get you. This is pretty unrealistic. And that's what I've seen many times on the show. People going right and left and right and left. And 10 years later, finally starting to realize, hey, maybe this is a career for me. And those are the best stories, actually. So, okay. You made this first free coding. Was it a course, a tutorial? Do you remember where it was?
I do. It was actually this course called Introduction to Computer Science at Udacity. The course might actually be archived now because I can't find it publicly. But then I also read this book by the same professor called Intro to Computing. And it's a book that's free online. And it completely changed my life.
Mm-hmm. Before we get to that, did your sister do a bootcamp on web development, on UI development or stuff like that? I'm interested in the dichotomy between what I picture with bootcamps, which is pretty much JavaScript-based, web-based course, and an intro to computer science, which kind of sounds way more theoretical and low-level than a bootcamp.
Yeah, she took so it was dev bootcamp, and it was a very much web development. I think at the time it was like Ruby, but it was very much, web development. And then Yeah, I think I just stumbled onto that one. I didn't even know the difference at the time. I was thinking computer science, web development, like what do these things even mean? But I love the professor in the class. It's like build your own web crawler with Python. And then there is also some theoretical stuff as well. And I think just the professor got me really excited about coding.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you meant when you said change my life?
Yes, I took the class and I started out, you know, writing Python, and it was just so much fun. It felt like a game to me, and I couldn't believe that people could actually make a career out of this. And I also didn't need to go back to school to get into it, which was really exciting for me as well, because I did not enjoy college.
But did you have in mind that this would become your career or could become a career?
Yeah, after seeing my sister and taking that class, I just thought, oh my gosh, like I can do this. And if I, you know, study hard and with some luck, I think I could actually go do this.
Okay. So how did you picture this learning phase, this accelerating toward a career phase in your mind?
I think the biggest thing was, well, I guess I had no idea at first. I had no idea how it would go, but I did know, okay, I don't need a traditional degree for this, right? There are people who can do it without a traditional degree. So I thought maybe I'll do a boot camp, maybe I'll do some online courses, but I can probably figure it out from there.
So how did you?
To think on that, I think what I really focused on was building as much as possible. And then I knew I needed to then create a portfolio and then figure out how to get a job. Like, how do I get in front of people? How do I stand out from a bunch of other people who also are trying to get a job and have no experience as well? So I knew I needed to build up projects, create some sort of portfolio, and then somehow network. And those were like the three things I think I focused on in the year when I was learning to code and trying to make that transition.
Mm-hmm. Did you mean building in order to create this portfolio, or are you the type of person who needs to build in order to learn? Or both, maybe?
I'd say both, yes. But I wish I had started building sooner. One trap I kind of got into was taking courses and not building anything. I see this a lot when people message me where they're like, I want to learn to code, and now I'm taking this 15-hour Udemy, and they're like, oh, but I got bored, or I paused. And I'm thinking, well, of course you got bored. You're not really building anything, and courses are amazing. But if you're just kind of passively watching and you're not building anything, it's just not going to really be as engaging as if you were picking something exciting you want to work on and building it.
Mm-hmm. How did you realize that you needed that?
I kept having this experience where, so I was learning to code and I would pick good courses and I'd be watching them, and then the course ends and you open up your terminal to go build something and you're like, I just took this, you know, 5-hour course and there's so much I could go do here. And then you can't even write a single line of code on your own. Like, full stop.
I remember after some engineering classes in college about mechanics and everything, opening the hood of my car and saying, no, I know how a car works now. And looking at this, oh boy. I have no idea what is what. On theory, I can tell you how an engine is working, but I have no idea which piece is which.
It's not a great feeling.
No, it's not. It's not. Okay, so you meant on one side building a portfolio, and then you made networking.
Yes.
How did you attack the networking problem?
I think the first thing I started doing was just, sorry, I feel like I messed up there. That's a good question. I definitely started blogging, and I'd say just simple little things like tweeting out about a coding class that I loved and maybe tagging a professor. Mm-hmm. And not really thinking, oh, I'm networking and, oh, I can use this person later. But really just the exciting thing about coding is that everything is, so many things are open source. And especially in the JavaScript community, there are so many incredible instructors and people building things. And if you just start talking to them, and if you're excited about what they're doing, then you kind of organically network. And Yeah, I just think there's something really special about the JavaScript community in particular, where when I just started tweeting a little bit and trying to reach out to people, not saying I need a job or I need this or like, will you mentor me? But just getting excited about various things and sharing what I was learning. And then from there, people will help you and become your friend. And so, yeah, I think it just kind of organically.
Since it's been a few years now, do you have the opposite experience? People are reaching out to you and asking those questions now?
Yeah, I do. It's actually overwhelming at this point. I'm so behind on my messages and everything. I feel a bit bad on that.
Yeah, I know it can be overwhelming. I'm not sure. So I'm not really in the JavaScript ecosystem. So maybe this is a speciality of the JavaScript. But what I expected was way more than what I'm seeing in terms of volume. I think people are kind of censoring themselves and not asking questions way more than the opposite. And so,
why do you think that is?
I'm basing on the sample size of one, so watch out what I'm saying. But what I've observed is mostly at conferences. I've given talks, many talks at conferences and keynotes, and I would see people seeing me alone somewhere and not coming to talk to me. And if I came to them for whatever reason, then we would have some fantastic discussions. But people not wanting to I don't know, disturb you or something like this, and thinking, well, they cannot disturb you with one question. And well, I can say no. I'm old enough to say no if I don't want to answer. But why censor yourself at the very beginning? So I don't know. But yeah. I know that, oh, so go ahead. Yeah. But I know the JavaScript community is very, very wild, and there's a lot of talk online about that. So maybe you don't have this problem. But anyhow, okay, you mentioned building and networking, and there was a third one and didn't pick up on that one. Sorry about that.
Building projects, creating a portfolio, networking. I'd also say having a plan. So like any, you know, when you're in college or something like that, you're taking certain classes and you know what subjects you're taking and you'll know, you know, mm-hmm. when am I studying, what days am I studying? And you have to do just the same. You have to design your own learning plan. And I think for the first few months, I didn't really do that. So I played around in different languages. Like I said, Python, JavaScript. I hopped around, looked at different fields, like, oh, web development. Oh, but there's a lot in this field, right? Oh, mobile programming, really interesting things. Oh, data science. And it was fun to kind of check out these different things. But then you don't want to wake up 6 months later and realize that you dabbled around and procrastinated and you never settled on really digging into one language or like building up one solid skill. So I think just creating a solid plan of like what you're going to learn, what language is it going to be you're going to start off with, creating a schedule, especially when you're completely self-taught, since I didn't end up going to a bootcamp. That is really important. And I think having a plan and consistency, that's going to make or break you in terms of, will I actually wake up in a year from now and be ready to apply for jobs or not?
Mm-hmm. Did you have somebody helping you in creating this plan?
My sister definitely helped me a bit because she was already a developer. And she kind of told me like boot camps are great, but you can also learn on your own. And it's definitely hard because boot camps provide things that you don't get on your own. But she definitely helped me a little bit. And then other than that, I guess I just kind of went for it.
Okay. So how did you find the things you didn't know you didn't know?
Probably mostly from asking my sister, just, you know, asking her like, yeah, what even is this type thing? And a lot of the times I think, yeah, you don't find those until eventually later. And I think that's okay, right? And you kind of like feel your way through and then you learn on the job.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not really another way. You just have to find... It has to cross your path at some point, and then it's on the table. It's a piece of the puzzle that's on the table, and then you can start doing something with it.
There's a lot of things we don't know, and you just have to go figure it out.
Absolutely. So at what point did you decide, okay, I'm far enough, now I can apply for a job?
Well, I've been asked that question before, like when did you feel ready? Like, when was I far enough to feel confident to apply? I would say I never felt ready. I never felt like I was far enough. But I think there came a point about like roughly a little over a year when I figured it's probably best to dive in and start interviewing, because interviewing will tell you where you're at. It will show you your gaps. Mm-hmm. It will show you your gaps in your knowledge, be a good place to test where you're at. And also, I think when you do want to start interviewing, you might give yourself a date like, okay, I'm going to study for like 1 month and then I'll start interviewing. But there's really nothing like diving in, because knowing, okay, once I had like my first interview set up, then you start studying like crazy because you actually have a deadline. I didn't really feel ready at all, but I think it was a little over a year in when I just said to myself, I'm just going to go for it and schedule some interviews and see how it goes from there. Because I think you just never feel ready. And at some point, you're just procrastinating.
That is true. That is very true. It's, yeah, I compare it to parenting, I guess. you never know that you're ready. At some point, you just start, and you'll build your ship while you sail it. So,
yeah, that's what every parent has.
I have three kids. I confirm with my simple size of three. Okay, so which jobs did you shoot first for, and how did you pick those ones? Maybe not exactly the ones you wanted, but something close enough to get some experience under your belt, etc. How did that first applying go?
The first thing I did was apply everywhere. Like I really just wanted any sort of job. I wasn't even thinking about any specific company, really. I just thought, if I can get experience absolutely anywhere, I don't care where it is. That was kind of my mentality. But I noticed that I didn't hear back much at all, which I think makes sense. And especially today, it's even harder, where there's just so many people with no experience trying to get their first developer job. And, you know, blasting out applications is not a great strategy, because, yeah, I just didn't hear back at all. And so from there, I went with a different plan. It's actually kind of controversial, I would say, but I essentially decided to create myself a free internship so I could get some experience. And then once I had experience, I knew that everything would change for me and that I would be able to get more and more opportunities once I had that first experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how did you find this first internship?
Yeah, so what I did was I watched this, I think it was a TED Talk by this guy, Charlie, I'm forgetting his last name, but he talks about doing free work, kind of a free internship. And, you know, at the time, I wasn't paying for a coding bootcamp and I was living at home with family and I had left college, so I didn't have all this college debt. I didn't have to keep paying off college. And so I had a lot of money that maybe like the average millennial would have used somewhere else, right? That I figured, okay, how can I use this? Essentially, or how can I, you know, I have this living at home, low expenses. And so in his talk, he talks about how if you do free work for a period of some months, you can gain a bunch of experience. And so what I did was I found some startups that I thought were interesting, and I ended up picking about four or five, I believe. And then I cold emailed each one of them and I said why I was excited about them. And I also said, here's my portfolio. And I also pitched them and I said, take me on for 2 months. And if I do good work, you could pay me after that. We could figure something out. That was my pitch. And a few of them replied. I ended up picking one. And it was actually incredible because, yeah, so free work is not something I always recommend. People get quite mad about this. Like, oh, you're telling people to work for free, which I totally get it. But in my case, I ended up getting so much free mentorship. So when I started that job, there was a developer who'd been working as a developer for 15 years, and he was mentoring me every day and helping me, answering my questions. And so the value I got out of that was so incredible.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Indeed, that was the mixed feelings I had, saying, well, free work, but I guess if it's time boxed, if you know what you're doing, if you're not forced to do it, but that's this decision from your end, well, why not? And furthermore, if you really get some mentorship and you're not just exploited on this end, but really the company going out of their way to help you so that you really get something out of that, I guess that's okay. So how did it go besides somebody mentoring you for 2 months?
It was incredible. I learned so much in that 2 months, like much more than I had learned in the previous several months just working on my own. Because when you start working on a real production app, you start working on a small engineering team, you start to see what it's like to make pull requests and, you know, what's the difference between production and staging. So I just learned so much and I had an incredible time. And yeah, it can be controversial, and I don't urge people to go work for free because there can be very bad situations. But I really viewed it as, you know, exchanging my work for mentorship, kind of similar to a coding bootcamp. You know, a lot of these coding bootcamps have labs now where you get together with a group of people and you're working or something like that. And I really viewed this as that, as an apprenticeship. And it was only a few months later when they ended up saying, you're doing good and we're going to pay you and take you on.
Oh, so it's evolved into a full-time job.
Yeah. So I got a little promotion after a few months and then I went on from there.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. How did that experience influence the plan you had in mind for yourself?
Influence the original plan I had?
Yes.
I guess it confirmed that I could do it, right? Like I got the experience. And so it confirmed that I was on my way becoming a developer. And so I was really happy.
Mm-hmm. Did it bring new pieces or puzzle pieces on the plan? They say, okay, I didn't know I needed to learn about that. And now I have to revise my priorities to learn this before I can learn something else. Or were you still somehow on track with what you wanted to learn next?
I think it actually, I went in there and I was working and I realized that I enjoyed front-end development a lot. And so I think it switched the plan in that way because I had always thought I would like to be full stack. But then actually in that job, I just realized that front-end was really interesting to me. And there's so much in front-end that you can go into. So I think it did shift it in that way. And I think focusing on full stack can be a bit overwhelming actually. And so once I really picked one front-end to just try to master and hone in on, that was actually pretty helpful too.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Makes sense. What attracted you in front end? Was say, hey, that might be.
I think just being a user of so many applications every day, and I don't know if this has happened to you, but just even being on my phone now and looking at websites and thinking, like, how did this load? And I like how this image faded in, and you start to think about creating this wonderful experience. And so I really loved that and being able to build that. Or just sometimes when you're on a site and you have a bad experience and thinking about like, how could I have made this better? And the psychology of it too, where you're waiting for something to load and you quit and you're just never going to use that site or that product again because of how the UI was working and you didn't like it. And I just think that's really interesting.
Raise your hand if you've downloaded an app to see the source code of the pages you go to on your phone. Yeah.
Oh, anyway. Yes.
My hand is touching the ceiling right now. I get that. I get that. Okay. So in this company, you were able to go deep into the UI or not?
Yes.
So how did that go? Did you have to pick one side? Did you have to go, I don't know, Angular 1? Did you have to geek out on some technologies? And how did that evolve?
They introduced me to React. And gosh, this was a while ago. It was like 4 years ago. I don't even know my timelines anymore. But they introduced me to React, and I had only heard of it a little bit before. Because it wasn't that as popular as it is now, but I'm really grateful they did because I loved it. And it's obviously valuable to be able to work with React and have that skill.
Mm-hmm. And the mentorship continued during that time?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay. So why did you leave at some point?
Why did I leave?
Why did you leave?
I left because I got a higher salary offer from somewhere else. But okay. I kind of do regret leaving because I think at the time, you know, I thought, oh, I can get, you know, more money somewhere else. And I kind of jumped at that chance. But I didn't realize that the kind of mentorship I had at the time is not found everywhere. So I had later experiences where I went to different jobs. And it was sometimes when you're in a startup, you don't have a mentor and you pretty much have to teach yourself everything. And so that's why I left. But if I could go back, I probably would have stayed because I didn't realize at the time that having a mentor type situation in a job is actually can be rare in the developer world I've found. And so if you have that, definitely, you know, keep it if you can.
Mm-hmm. Did you contact them since then, or did you have contact with them to give them that feedback saying, hey, that was very valuable what you gave me?
I feel like I've told them, but I could tell them more. And, you know, yeah, I should express that gratitude much more because it was amazing.
I'm not encouraging you. Yes, I am. I feel like some people go out of their way doing this, but they don't realize it. It's of course they're doing that, but it's not self-explanatory. I don't know how to say this. I have the term in German and French in my mind. Oh God. You don't find this everywhere. And when you find it, I really go out of my way to say to the people, to thank them, for what they're doing, because it's really, really not something you find everywhere.
Yeah, that is so true. Some people, I've had some team leads that just mentorship, they don't see it as part of the job. They don't really they see it as this kind of extra thing. And then I've had other people, my last team lead at the company, Keeper Security, I was at, where he really believed in, you know, any time needed, whether it's tap on the shoulder in the office, call on Slack, absolutely any time. He was always there to help, to dive into something. He would, you know, spend extra hours like, oh, I'll show you this if you want to learn about this thing. And it was really incredible. But that's definitely not everyone kind of believes in that, doing that.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Did you experience it the other way around though? People tapping on your shoulder and asking you for guidance?
I do now, yeah. And I feel like with anyone, with any junior developer that I work with or new developer, I want to be someone to help them, even if I don't know what they're doing, even if I can't figure it out yet. I feel really adamant about that. I just really want to be helpful to them at any time, because I know what it's like when you're working somewhere maybe and you just don't have good mentorship and you're feeling pretty lost.
Mm-hmm. So how do you try to help? Do you have some best practice?
I think the first thing I always try to do is just make sure they know that I can be free anytime. Just, I mean, that sounds bad. That sounds like I'm making myself unproductive almost, but just letting them know that I'm always there for them. I think that's the first one. I'm not sure if I have really solidified what the others are. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But I think just making it clear that I'm always around, even for something, quote, stupid or silly, like I'm always there to look at code or help.
Mm-hmm. That matches up very much with what I believe in. I love to strip down mentoring to be there, listen, and ask questions. And the first one, be there, is not meant lightly. You have to be there. You have to make yourself available. You have to not just tell, but also show that you are there when people need you. And you have to go over this first step first. And then when you're there, first start by listening, not right away jumping in and explaining everything. Listen to what's happening. Listen to what is really needed. And this is also something that that we need to learn first and see how people react to that. And then at some point, start asking questions and the rest ensues. But first, be there, listen, and ask questions. And that's where I start with mentorship always.
Yeah.
So I'd like, yeah, sure. You want to say something?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. I want to switch something. There's this code book club, and I'm very interested about that. So how did this idea come to your mind, and how did you start it, and how did it evolve after that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I created it because I kept seeing this problem, which is, I think, like, whether you're just learning how to code or you've been working as a developer for years, I found that like it can be difficult for me to get the accountability or the support I need when I'm learning a new skill. And if you think about it, if you're at a boot camp, right, and you pay for it, you get that skin in the game and you have peers. And or if you're learning on the job, you have to learn or you'll get fired. But I think oftentimes when we're learning on our own on the weekends, there's nothing really keeping you accountable. And also, there are places like Twitter and things like that. But when I want to learn something, I would often feel like a little bit lonely. And this was even before the pandemic. So the book club, you know, 20 years ago before the pandemic began. Just kidding. It became a few months before the pandemic. I just felt like I was learning a bunch of things on the weekends kind of on my own. And I wanted to have some sort of community or people who are learning more with me. And I don't know really where there is a centralized place as a developer where you can get that. And so that's kind of why I created it.
Mm-hmm. So did you start it with a colleague, with a friend, and just find anyone and just start this own accountability, telling each other what you're doing and stuff? Or did you have a master plan? How did you initiate this club?
I started with a plan with two friends, and we said, we want to read this You Don't Know JS book series. I think it's about 5 books by Kyle Simpson. And then the day before it started, both my friends were like, I don't have time, can't do it. And then it was just me.
So much for accountability.
I know. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm going to post this all over Twitter and maybe someone will join me. And so I posted, and then it got a ton of responses. The Discord I created ended up getting like 3,000 people joined. Like the first few weeks. I know, it was amazing. And so then a small group started happening, you know, every Sunday at 2 p.m. And that's kept up for almost 2 years. Like, I don't know, it started over a year and a half ago. And wow. We finished that entire series. And then now we've moved on to things like one of the things we do is live coding. So I'll come on and it's maybe like 10 of us. Sometimes it's 20 of us. It kind of depends. But there's a core group in there. And one thing we do is I'll share my screen and we'll pick a problem that like no one has seen recently, right? Kind of like in a coding interview when they just give you some problem and you haven't really seen it. And then we, as a group, we try to go over it. So I'll be coding or someone else is coding. And then we try to tackle it together. And that's been really helpful for me because it can be really scary to like live code or code in front of other people. But once you build up that muscle, I think it's kind of like public speaking. Once you get used to it, then it becomes less scary. And new developers who join have told me that it's really valuable to, you know, see another developer, maybe someone like me where I'm a few years in now, you see how they solve something or you see how they go through something or you see that they just get really stuck. And that can be helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. So are you using, JS Fiddler or something like this to explore this? Or are you using a Git repo and sharing all that together? How does the setup look like?
We've used a bunch of different things. For a long time, we were on codewars.com and I would share my screen and then we would take the code and paste it into the Discord later so everyone could see it. We've used JS Fiddle. We've used many different tools. Right now we're doing like the free code camp coding prep section, but we'll just use their, you know, built-in stuff they have.
Okay, yeah, makes sense. And when you were reading You Don't Know JS, were you going one chapter after the other? Everyone prepares or reads the chapter beforehand and then you discuss, or how did that?
Yeah, everyone reads beforehand and then join and discuss, have discussion questions. There's also a quiz that someone created to go with the book. So we would take the quiz every Sunday. Super grateful I found people who want to wake up on Sunday and take a coding quiz because it doesn't always sound like good to do, but it's an amazing group.
Yeah, with time zones, you always have it's always morning for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some people joining us at like 1 a.m. their time. They're like, I really wanted to come to the call.
That's amazing. And so do you have some plans to go over a book series or a book again?
Yeah, we just ended You Don't Know JS. And so with the timing of this podcast, I think we're starting on Eloquent JS next, which I think is a slightly more beginner, but I think it's good value to just go over the fundamentals again. And then we'll keep up with our group programming that we do every week as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you have in mind to juggle between different experience levels, one group going to Eloquent and one group going to something more advanced? Or going back to the basics and it suits everyone's needs?
There are a few other groups that are working on going into more intermediate material, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so I've kept that in mind as like, where's the balance there between, you know, people who want to learn beginner things and people who want to learn more intermediate. But we've had a couple of other people who are on the beginner side, like start their own clubs recently, which is really exciting. So just in the Discord, you know, figuring out a time and a book they wanted to read and then hosting their own meetup.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you just come with a book in mind and just say, hey, we're going to go from chapter this and this and that every week, and it's going to take us 10 weeks, and who wants to join?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay. And how much time do you have to spend on running the show? Running this show, I mean.
I don't even know. I've lost count. Like, I've lost track of time. And, you know, I try to look at the Discord every day. It got pretty overwhelming at points where you just get so behind on messages and then new people are joining and asking for a quick call. But then if it's like someone asking every single day, it can get to be quite a lot. But I try to check in on things every night. And I'm really lucky because once I tried to create the community, people just show up who want to be a part of it. And people have essentially started running the community without me and been leaders and have been helping people out, which is really incredible to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I'm linking it back to the comments before about people reaching out to you and having a backlog of messages to answer. Okay. If you had 3,000 people on that Discord for a while, yeah, that can be a lot of traffic then. I see where that comes from. Oh, fantastic. But you seem to have even too much time on your hands because you created the podcast as well. What were you thinking?
I know. Yeah.
So what was the idea behind the podcast? What was missing that you wanted to add?
That's a great question. Well, I listen to podcasts all the time and I love them so much. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to do it was I have so many questions that I want to ask the incredible developers that I've found or whose open source work I've used or, you know, the blog posts they've written. And so with a podcast, you get to basically have this conversation with really interesting people and you get to ask them all your burning questions. And it's almost like a form of mentorship for me in a way.
It is. I just always see this. You reach out to somebody with I don't know how many thousands of followers on Twitter and say, can I pick your brain for 1 hour? The answer will be no. But if you say, can I pick your brain for 1 hour and publish it? Then the answer is yes. So let's go.
Yes. There's so many incredible people. And exactly that. If you just say the same thing, but I have a podcast, then they're completely up for it.
Absolutely.
And you learn so much too. I mean, I did a podcast because I worked for a cybersecurity company for 2 years. And so I read a lot about cryptography and the state of security today and encryption and all these things. And I wanted to interview this professor whose cryptography courses I've been watching on YouTube. They're amazing intro to crypto. And by crypto, I mean cryptography. And so I messaged him and then as I was preparing, I had been reading all these books on cryptography and security, but just knowing that I was going to be talking to an expert, I learned 10 times more than I would have if I was on my own, because you need to be able to carry on a conversation and know what you're talking about. And so it's just an incredible, you know, way to learn.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm nodding heavily. You cannot see it, but I'm nodding heavily. Do you have a preferred episode of your show that you could advise listeners to go and listen to?
I feel like they're all my favorites. I did one with Scott Moss, though, and that was just an incredible episode. He just has so many great insights, and a lot of the things he says are, I think at first they seem counterintuitive. So like one tip he gave me that really helped me during my last round of interviews when I was decided to look for a new job, he talks about how one thing we do when we're interview prepping is we tend to cram. So we have like an interview coming up in 4 days and then we're cramming and we're trying to learn a bunch. And he talks about how that actually makes us feel like we are less prepared, because as you're cramming, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know this and I don't know that. And the interview's coming up and you get even less prepared while cramming. And so he just talks about how he doesn't cram before interviews. And I realized that that's actually super helpful for me. Once I stopped trying to extra prepare a few days before an interview and just decided to, you know, be consistently learning all in the time before that. And that really helped me out so much. It made interviews less stressful and I've done better throughout them. So yeah, long story short, he just has a lot of great advice in that episode that was really good.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this advice would have worked for you at the beginning of your career?
That's a good question. I still think so, because if you're consistently learning over months, then you might not need to cram as much. If you're consistently learning new things and in a good spot, then, you know, just like 3 or 4 days before, you might not need to be studying like crazy and staying up late and things like that. So I think so. Although, yeah, I guess I don't know for sure because I was absolutely cramming a bunch. That's a good question. It's good to think on.
We all did, I guess. But I would advise as well, at some point at least, to be yourself and not pretend to be somebody else by cramming as much as you can. And just
absolutely
be who you are. And if the company doesn't want you with what you learned so far, then they're probably not interested in you learning. They're interested in your skills that you have right now. And then that's not necessarily the place I want to be in personally. So
yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so looking back far, far, far away in a galaxy, far away at the very beginning of your story, when you decided to drop out of college and when you were wondering, is this a new career for me? What would be the one advice that you have for somebody exactly in this place, thinking, well, maybe it is, maybe it's not, I don't know?
I'd say if you enjoy it, then go for it. And don't worry about your lack of credentials or where you're at. Like, it's not that hard. You can do it.
If you enjoy it, go for it. It's so simple, yet very powerful. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time worrying about, you know, especially after I had dropped out of college, like, am I smart enough for this? Can I do this? Will I ever be able to get into this? And mostly those worries were kind of a waste. I think if you study hard and obviously some luck is involved, of course, then you can make the transition and become a developer.
Amen to that. Thank you. So, Madison, where would be the best place to continue or start a discussion with you?
Probably on Twitter. So it's just Madison Canna. And then also just my website, madisoncanna.com.
Do you have anything else you want to plug in before we call it a day?
I don't think so, but thank you.
But we'll add a link to Twitter and your homepage as well. The book club, I guess there's a page for that. And so you just scroll down in the show notes and you'll be able to click on this. Awesome. Madison, thank you very, very much.
Thanks so much, Tim.
And this has been another episode of DevPistry, and we'll see each other next week. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I hope you have enjoyed this week's episode. If you like the show, please share, rate, and review. It helps more listeners discover those stories. You can find the links to all the platforms the show appears on our website, devjourney.info/subscribe. Creating the show every week takes a lot of time, energy, and of course money. Would you please help me continue bringing out those inspiring stories every week by pledging a small monthly donation? You'll find our Patreon link at devjourney.info/donate. And finally, don't hesitate to reach out and tell me how this week's story is shaping your future. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Timothep, T-I-M-O-T-H-E-P, or per email, info@devjourney.info. Talk to you soon.